Om Shanti. Sister Jenti is Director of Brahma Kumaris for UK, Europe and the Middle East, and Brahma Kumaris representative at the United Nations office in Geneva. So that in itself, that the combination of roles is a very significant one, organisationally and personally. But really, Jenti Ben is so different from that and so much more than that. Because of the unique position of London as international coordinating office, hub, heart for Brahma Kumaris, and because of her unique personality and gifts, she's in touch with, has met, knows so many people, so many of us all over the world over the last 40 plus years. She's one of the most available, accessible and inspiring of all of our sisters and brothers, and as you can see, extremely detached from whatever titles and praise anyone tries to give her. It's a marvellous opportunity. Jenti Ben is always here during peace of mind time, for some or not, or all of the time. But she's made it her personal commitment to always be with us. And so for that we say thank you and look forward to hearing from you today and tomorrow. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti and good morning. My hope is that you've not only been hearing about the soul, that you've been experimenting with the consciousness of soul, and so perhaps you've already experienced the great power that emerges when we come back to that identity of the inner being, the self, the soul. Who feels they've had a glimpse of this? Just indicate. Great. Many of you, and I'm sure that even for those who are not putting up their hands, from time to time, you've had a taste of it, a flavour of it. And of course, always the possibility of more and more and more. If I tell you that the lesson or the BKs we're hearing today was about soul consciousness, and within the gathering there were people who've been practicing 50 years and the whole range, a year to 50 years. So obviously it's a subject that's a very deep and subtle one. And yes, one can understand what it's all about. I am a soul, and even say those words within a very short space of time. But the more I go within, the more treasures I find. And so the journey inwards is a very rich one, a very beautiful one, and a very powerful one. Powerful because it's through this inner journey that one is able to bring about change. And I think that for many of those who I've met, some of you I've seen, but it feels as if what you're wanting is a shift, a change in your own life. Am I right? Yes? Soul consciousness is the method of transformation, really, truly. And without it, it doesn't work. Even on a very simple level, whoever it is I live with, work with, meet from time to time, if my language or my thinking is that I'm feeling that, you know, they need to change this. If only they would change this, then our relationship would be fine, our work would be great, we'd be able to do so much together. But you know, they really need to change this. Have you ever had that thought? Has it worked? Probably no. But also, interesting, when I'm pointing a finger out there, look again. three fingers are pointing at me. And that's the difference between the awareness of the external identity, the physical identity, and the awareness of the inner identity. In my physical identity, I point here and I say, but you know, they should do this, 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 and this. Why aren't they doing all of this? But in soul consciousness, the awareness of the inner being, I'm truly looking inside and seeing what is it that I need to do. Because in any relationship, it's two energies that are coming together. And if this one is whatever they are, but if I decide I'm going to shift, I'm going to change, then the chemistry changes. It's not up to the other one to change. It's actually up to me to change if I want things to be different. And the problem with expecting somebody else to change is that I don't know how long I'm going to have to wait for. Might be never. But if I say I'm going to change, when does that begin? Now. It begins with my thought. I want to change. As soon as that thought comes, I begin the journey of bringing about transformation. And so maybe one of the greatest power of soul consciousness is this ability to have this realization that my transformation is my responsibility, and literally it has nothing to do with anything out there. People, circumstances, opportunity, lack or abundance, none of those things are involved. It's just my own perception, my own thinking, my own understanding, and my realization. And my transformation begins right now, if I choose to make it happen in that way. It means that I'm taking full responsibility, and whilst I don't take responsibility, I'm helpless because somebody else is responsible and I'm totally dependent on them. When they decide to pull the strings, then I'll dance, and if they don't pull the strings, I'm static, immobile. But I take responsibility and I can choose to do whatever it is I feel I need to do at this moment. And it's not just me. In that inner awareness of the soul, it becomes very easy to feel the presence of the divine. And again, I'm sure that all of you have had this experience too. When you're caught up in the position and the external form, then where is God? God is very far away. But when I go on the inner journey and come back to the awareness of the inner being, it's very natural, very easy to connect with the Supreme. And so my determined thought, but my connection with the Divine, and I'm receiving a huge amount of help in the form of spiritual power. Because I can understand that it's important to do something, but if I then say, but how can I do it? I feel helpless, or I don't have the strength, I don't have the courage, I know I should. It always stays in that range of theory, I should, but I won't actually get down to it and do it. But if I'm connecting, I'm receiving the power. And the power that comes is sometimes also what we describe as willpower. My will, but the power comes from above. And literally, it becomes so easy to change habits that otherwise I've been caught up with for maybe quite a long time. And I thought it's never going to be possible to change. But with the power that comes from up above, I see where I need to go, and that power enables me to get to that destination. And whether it's a short-term destination of changing little things, or whether it's a long-term destination of changing big things, I'm able to take that power and make both things happen. I need my realization, but I also need the gifts that come from God, and that will make the change possible. So that's one very, very important power that becomes accessible to the soul. Another one, certainly yesterday in the session with the group I was with, the word choice came up a great deal. We were talking about the cycle, of course, and I'm sure it must have come up in some way in your discussions also. I may have a variety of choices, but in fact, if I have too much choice, and I don't have enough wisdom with which to make my choice, the result of that little mix, you know what that is? Stress. It's stress. I go to buy some yogurt, and it's confusing just to see the variety of yogurts there are. And if I get stressed seeing this huge variety, what am I supposed to do? Which one is needed? I don't know. I'm putting it in a very simple way, but you can see that in today's world where we have a huge variety of choice, which direction do I go in? It's the formula for stress. And one of the great powers that comes through soul consciousness and the connection with the one above is the power of decision making. Maybe I've got everything I need in my life. Wonderful. But one thing I think we would all want to enhance is our capacity for decision making. Why? Because A, so much is artificial today, and the artificial sometimes seems even more beautiful than the real. And so it's very easy to get deluded. And not just artificial, but there's a lot of deception, pretense. And so for me to cut through all of that and be able to exactly see what's going on, my third eye needs to be very, very wide open. What do you think the third eye is? Does it open with an operation? Can you go somewhere and say, okay, right, this is what I want. I want my third eye open. Can you do it? Well, in fact, in a way, you have told the surgeon that this is what you want, and it is possible for the surgeon to do it. But it's definitely not a physical operation. It means the opening of the eye of wisdom. The third eye is the eye of wisdom. It's the state in which the soul is awake, alert, aware. When I come to the understanding of the self and I begin to see the self, then yes, this is the opening of the third eye. And when the third eye is open, I don't just see things on the external level, I'm able to see things below the surface. I'm able to see not just an event, but understand the significance of an event. You know how something has happened, and for you, it didn't seem to be such a big deal. But as time goes on, it becomes very clear that it was a big, big deal for the other. And it begins to impact everything else that's happening. And things can go very drastically wrong if I haven't understood not just what happened, but what was the significance of what happened. They said this, I said this, fine, that's pretty simple. But what was the effect of that on them? And so with my third eye open, I'm not just seeing the situation, I'm not just seeing the person, but I'm seeing the significance of the situation, and I'm able to understand the feelings of the person involved. Even to be able to see clearly, I need my third eye open. And of course, once that is open and I do see clearly, then the next step is that I need to be able to decide what it is I need to do. And when there is the eye of wisdom, it's much easier to say, not this, not this, not this, but this. This is what I need to do. If the third eye isn't open, again, I have multiple choices, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this, and maybe I'm using logic and reason, but I think we've all had the experience that logic and reason on their own just aren't enough. You also need intuition. You also need insight. And maybe you also need what we would say is a touching, a signal that comes from up above. And then you know what it is you need to do. And then the outcome is going to be what is going to be best for all. And so the power of decision making and all the energies that are involved in that, that definitely is one of the features of the soul. And in soul consciousness and in that connection, that becomes a very amazing power that we're able to develop in our life. And it means that you're able to look into the future. If this is the step I take now, if this is the conversation I have now, what will be the scenario? What will be the result? And so I know mindfulness is the fashionable buzzword now, so let me stay focused in the present, absolutely important, concentration, and without concentration, what can I achieve? Agree. But the third eye open means that I also am able to see the past and the future. At this moment, this is the situation, but what is it that has actually led to this? Sometimes you say something quite simple, innocuous. You don't realize that you're saying something that's actually going to create an explosion in the other. And it happens, and then we're shocked. But the third eye open, soul consciousness, wisdom, and I can pick up what it is that's happened, that's created the situation now, and what is it that I need to do to put things right so that the outcome is the best for all. So you can see that this all-round vision, past, present, and future, if I develop that, then there's less likelihood of regret. Otherwise, so often I've said things and as soon as the words are out of my mouth, I just know I shouldn't have. But it's too late. The arrow has already left the bow and it's hitting the target in a way that I didn't want. The ability of the soul to develop wisdom and have this, what's referred to as a third eye, is again a feature of soul consciousness and the connection with the divine. So just imagine, if you were to carry away even just these two powers with yourself from here, the power of transformation, the key to transformation, and secondly, the power of decision making, how would it impact your own life? So you can see that soul consciousness is not an abstract philosophical or theoretical idea, that soul consciousness is something that's very real and immediate, and nothing to do with white clothes. Some of you adopt white clothes once you're here in Abu, but maybe you won't be able to wear white clothes when you go back to Paris or London or wherever it is you come from. And you don't need to. What you do need to do is to just keep all these ideas here and use these things in your own life. And you'll continue to move forward on the path of spirituality. And it'll help you in whatever it is you're doing in your life. I was also thinking about the great powers of the soul as being the inherent qualities of the soul itself. The powers that we carry within ourselves, we've forgotten about those powers. These two things that I spoke about are very important. But I want to now explore the original qualities of the self and how these qualities are themselves a huge power that has energy to make things different in our lives. Do you remember the original qualities of the self? I'm sure it's come up at various times in workshops and discussions and talks. Peace, love, truth, joy, and purity. Yeah? Different people will put these in different sequence, but certainly peace and love and truth and happiness and purity, these are the ingredients. And in a way, these are the constituents of the soul. This is what I, the soul, am made up of. Let's explore these and see if these can be developed within the self as a power. You don't normally think about peace as being a power, but in fact, peace can be extremely powerful. Peace is not passive. Peace can be a huge energy that's able to create an impact around you. Many, many stories about this, practical experiences and examples. But one of the things that the world is facing more and more is climate change and the disasters that keep coming up with increasing frequency in our world. Imagine if something is happening around you. What would your response be? Would it be one of fear? Yes, that's understandable, that's natural. Would it be one of confusion? Where do I go? What do? I don't understand what's going on. Would it be one of becoming a victim and feeling totally helpless and waiting for somebody else to come to help you out, to rescue you? Or would it be one in which you're able to maintain your own inner peace, which means you're able to be stable inside without being shaken by the upheaval that's going on around. And in that state of inner peace and calm, you're able to connect. In confusion, you can't connect. And of course, if I'm dependent on this person, that person, and that person, my tendency at that moment would be to call them on my mobile. And you know what will happen? You can try that. But at moments of disaster, the mobile network don't be the first things that come down. The networks don't work. If it's human created act of violence, then definitely the first thing the government switches off are all the telephone towers. But if it's a natural disaster also, that's what gets impacted. And so I won't be able to phone you. You won't be able to phone me and find out where I am and how to reach me and how to help me with the best will in the world, the best intentions, and it won't happen. Not possible. So I have to rely on my own inner Wi-Fi, my own inner wireless, which means I have to be able to connect with the one up above. If I'm afraid and my mind is in upheaval, can I connect? The Lord is waiting for me, but I'm not catching the signal because my mind isn't stable enough to be able to understand what the signal is. And so I need to be very calm, very peaceful, very stable in any situation in which things are in upheaval, and in that stability I can connect and I can take whatever is a signal that comes. And for sure, in soul consciousness, connecting with God, I'm going to get the right signal. And maybe the signal I'm getting is, stay exactly where you are. Don't do anything. In earthquakes, usually that's the best policy. Stay where you are. But in another situation, maybe it's not the best policy. And the signal that I'll get is, go, leave. You know, when the Twin Towers fell down, 2001, was it? I think so. One of our brothers was working in the second tower. The first one had fallen, but people really didn't know what was going on. And he was in the second tower on the 62nd floor, something like that, working in the Port Authority of New York. And it was an open plan office, and the tannoy system was telling everybody, don't panic, stay where you are, don't panic, stay where you are. And he's a great yogi. And in the midst of all that chaos and confusion, he just went into silence. And then he said to the people around him, I'm going to try and walk down and go out. And those who want to come with me, you're welcome. And about 25 people decided to follow him. Many, many others were there, but they thought that was a crazy thing to try and do. But about 25 people did follow. And to navigate all those floors when, A, it's dark, there's wires everywhere, there's water some places, you can't see, you don't know what there is, what's going to happen. But he just kept going, steady, steady, making sure that the people who were with him were all together and coming out. They reached the last floor, the ground floor, and came out, and they actually then saw the second tower fall. And he was then able to take them to this group. He was able to take them to our center in Manhattan just to have a few comforting words, a cup of hot drink and something. And in a state of peace and calm, not only am I able to catch a signal and know what it is I need to do, but I'm also able to be an instrument to bring help to others, to support others at that moment. As you can imagine, many, many stories of this type, but that one was very dramatic. How do I increase my own power of peace? You've been hearing Dadi a couple of times now, and she begins with Om Shanti three times. The first Om Shanti, come back to the awareness of the self and remember, I am a being of peace. But in a situation of crisis, if I tell myself, I'm a being of peace, I'm a being of peace, I won't be able to feel it, and I won't be a being of peace. I'm trying to be a being of peace, but it'll escape me. But if from now, in surroundings that are peaceful, if when you go back home, every morning, you practice, and you remind yourself, let me spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just developing that experience of I, the peaceful soul, the being of peace. Yes, then at a time of crisis, you'll be able to say, I am a peaceful soul, and you will feel it. I remember there was a time when every day for several months in London at one point, Dadi took classes on Om Shanti every day for about several months. And every day she'd be sharing a different experience of Om Shanti. And one day she said, I have to remind myself to be Om Shanti 100 times a day. Things happen. And I remind myself, Om Shanti. People say things, Om Shanti. I remind myself. And so, this first Om Shanti, I am, in my original state of being, a being of peace. The second Om Shanti, my parent, the creator, is the ocean of peace. The one who has peace without any limits, without any boundaries, infinite peace, the ocean of peace. And every time I connect with my thoughts to the ocean of peace, that peace is able to reach the soul. And not only then am I feeling the peace, but the waves of the ocean don't just reach one individual. The waves of the ocean reach everybody. And so yes, at this moment I'm connecting, but the vibrations that emanate from the ocean of peace reach everyone who's around. And so, for example, we may have a dozen questions when we're waiting to go and see Daddy. And then when we're in front of Daddy, can't remember. All the questions are gone. The waves from the ocean of peace from above, she's invoking the ocean, and the ocean is reaching not only her, but the ocean is reaching me also. And so the waves make everyone become very, very peaceful, very calm. And so let me try that for myself also, to stay immersed in that ocean. And then whoever's around me and with me will feel that too. And they'll become peaceful also. And the third, my home is the land of silence, the place of peace. The stage, the world, the drama, the play, the unlimited drama that's being enacted here, but my home, beyond the physical dimension, the world of light. How far away is it? Very far. So far away that we can't measure the distance. But also very near. So near that with one thought, I can go there. One moment I'm here, very much here. Next moment, one thought, and my mind can go to that home of light, the home of peace. I, the soul, in my original form, just the being of light. My costume here, the play here, the drama here, but I journey to my home just for a few moments. And I experience and absorb within myself the stillness and the peace of my home. And so three different methods to increase my own experience of peace and to allow peace to become a power within the soul so that peace can shift things and move things and make things happen differently. Very early on, I can date it, it was 86, the International Year of Peace. And we were thinking about, this is January 86, we're thinking about how can we honor the UN Year of Peace. And in Australia, they've come up with this title, which is very catchy, A Million Minutes of Peace. And the title reaches us in London and we're thinking, what? It sounds great, but what do you do with it? How do you do it? What's it all about? And so then lots of discussions and it finally becomes a program in which we ask people to donate, not money, their thoughts of peace. Peace through prayer, through reflection, through positive thoughts, meditation, in whatever way they're comfortable. But Geneva, January, and one of the assistant secretary generals from New York of the UN has come across to Geneva to meet the NGOs there to see what they can do for the International Year of Peace. And a lot of peace activists. And the phrase that I'm hearing most frequently is, we have to fight for peace. Amazing, you got it instantly. But the people who were saying this, they didn't get it. It was just such a contradiction. Fight for peace? And I said, no, we don't fight for peace. If we fight, that's what you're going to get, more war. You're not going to have peace. The path that I walk on is the destination I'm going to get to. So if the path that I'm walking on is that of fighting, what's the destination? And this is the whole problem with the world, of course, today, isn't it? More arms, more weapons, more, but less and less and less peace in the world, less and less security in the world. So, I was saying that what the Rama Kumaris are going to do is to ask people to share thoughts of peace by being peaceful. peace starts inside. And if I'm peaceful inside, then I'm going to be able to be peaceful in my behavior, in my lifestyle. And yes, then possibly there can be peace in my home, in the family. And then there can be peace in my community. Then there can be peace in my country. And yes, even peace in the world becomes possible. But it has to start with me. And so here's a question for you. Do I have peaceful thoughts? And if I don't, can I do something about it? Yes, if I'm soul conscious, I am the master in charge of what's going on in my mind. And if I see that my thoughts are less than peaceful, it's up to me to change it, to adjust it, to mold it. Maybe my mind is going crazy and not very peaceful at all. And I can't meditate because my mind won't let me meditate. It's okay. Let me sit and read something. Very effective. Let me read something that's spiritual, that's uplifting, that's going to be beneficial, that's nourishing for the mind. Let me read something. If I can't turn the pattern of my thoughts away from peacelessness to peace, away from aggression to peace, then reading something that I know is spiritual, picking up a magazine, isn't the answer. Maybe it'll help peace, maybe it'll incite more peacelessness. But some spiritual material that I know is uplifting. Let me read that. And not just read it, but taking each sentence, each aspect, let me sit and reflect. I read something and I pause. What does this mean? What is it saying to me? And very soon, not only will my mind become peaceful, but it will become very easy for me to connect with the divine. Maybe even reading isn't working. Let me sit down and write. And when I'm writing, I have to think about what I'm writing. My pen won't just float across the paper. If I'm reading, my eyes can skim the page and my mind can still be somewhere else. When I'm writing, I actually have to think about what I'm writing. And so let me sit and write. And maybe all I'm writing is what's going on in my mind. Even that's okay. It'll have a therapeutic effect. I'm getting out whatever is the problem. And after a little while, the mind will find another level, another awareness. And what I'm writing now is not the aggression that I was feeling earlier, but now it's more reflective. Now I'm looking inwards and seeing things from a different perspective. But to find a way in light of knowing that I am in charge of my mind. Who's in charge of my mind? Someone out there? It's a problem. If I think that you're in charge of my thoughts and my feelings, huge problem. But if I've accepted and understood, I am the creator of my own thoughts and feelings, and I go on this journey within, and I'm in charge. And I can change the direction of my thoughts when I choose. And so whether it's reflection, reading, writing, and then reflection, it's fine, whatever it takes. But I have to come back to that awareness of who I truly am. and that feeling of inner peace, which is my own state of being. If I remind myself of Om Shanti 100 times a day, how much power of peace am I accumulating within myself? Try it even for half a day and just see. And you'll be fascinated that it's not hard work. It's just a little bit of attention. And if with a little bit of attention, the rewards are so huge, the feeling that I get is this amazing strength that comes from peace, then definitely the little bit of effort that I'm making is well worth my while. The power of peace impacts people. The power of peace impacts the atmosphere. The power of peace impacts situations. The power of peace is able to change minds and hearts of people. And we're able to move towards a peaceful way of life. So, are my thoughts peaceful? My words. If my words are filled with a bit of cynicism, if my words are filled with sarcasm, how peaceful am I? If my words are filled with discontent, how peaceful am I? So the peaceful mind, this peaceful state of being, and the quality of my words are very peaceful, which also means very positive, which means that they are very uplifting for others, they are a support for others, they are a help for others, cooperation for others. So I might not be able to do anything for them. I can't give them my time, I can't give them my money, I can't give them my skills, whatever reason, but I can't. But what the least that I can do is say a few words of encouragement, a few positive words of peace that can help someone move further on their journey, whatever it is they're doing. I can definitely do that. And that is great cooperation. How often is it that somebody's told you, maybe 5 years later, 10 years later, you know, when I met you at that moment, the words you said to me were so powerful, were so helpful, that it made a great difference and I was able to carry on. Your words brought me out of the darkness and I was able to move forward. I'm sure many of you must have heard people say this to you. But equally the other way, harsh words, criticism, and definitely my mind isn't very peaceful when I'm thinking about all this. Maybe we have 100 thoughts and 2 words come out, but if it's 2 words of criticism, I've had 100 thoughts that are quite negative. And so bad for me, but damaging for the other, and very damaging for the atmosphere. And of course, karma and the return of karma and all of that happens. And so my thoughts, my words, my actions, the food that I eat. Is the food that I eat based on non-violence? Leave it with you to think about. And until my food is based on non-violence, how can we stop war in the world? No way. So a lifestyle based on the power of peace, and the world can change. The world can become a peaceful world. Yesterday we spoke about the start of the cycle, an age of peace, an age of harmony. We're laying the seeds for that now, creating the foundation of that. And so I should be able to see the results of that, even in a limited way at this moment. And the more I see that, and the more I'm creating this pattern, this habit of peace, the more it's visible and the more it becomes effective and real. Let me think about the power of love, because love is also a power. And definitely many people in the past have used that statement, that love is the greatest of all powers. When you've shown appreciation, when you've shown kindness to an individual, do you know how effective that is? How it helps them move on in their life? When I read a particular story, it's a real story, I read it some time ago, but it touched me very much. I'll share it with you. A child was a good child at school, and then at some point his appearance began to change. He came to school looking a bit dirty, disheveled, not really caring about his appearance. But at the same time, the academic work was also suffering. His behavior was also now not polite. And so things were definitely going downhill. And the parents, the teachers knew that the boy was having trouble at home, but nobody really bothered to find out. Too busy. And the child got the label of being a difficult child. And one of the teachers who hadn't been with that child comes on the scene, and that child is now in her class, and he's now quite rude because he's really become very rebellious and distant from everyone. And she decides to take the time to sit with the child. And of course, once that rebelliousness has started, it's not so easy to penetrate. But she's patient, and she's kind, and she persists, and the child finally is able to let down his defenses and tell her that, yes, for the last few years, his mother had cancer, and then some time ago, she had died, and the father hadn't been able to cope very well with his own feelings, and definitely wasn't able to take care of the child. But until she actually got into the detail of the story, nobody had bothered to find out exactly what was going on or to offer the help that was needed. And now this one teacher decided to offer all the help that was needed and went out of her way. And at first it was just the time. And maybe time is our most precious commodity. In a way it is. But she took the time and understood, and then in other practical ways was also helping. Many, many years later, she got an invitation to a wedding. Sorry, I've become emotional. And it was from this child who's now become a doctor, doing very well in life. And he's remembered his teacher from so many years ago. And he tells her, "You changed my life. The power of love expressed as kindness. No relationship and no motive but just pure love. How come we're not able to offer this? Usually, because we ourselves don't feel love within. The soul has become dry, the soul has become empty, and we're not feeling that love inside. And so we don't have it to be able to give it or share it. And so, the method of Raj Yoga, I have to learn to love myself. And the way to love myself is by valuing myself. How do I value myself? When I go inside and I see myself as that original pure soul, and I see the treasures of these qualities and values inside myself, when I see myself as the child of God, I begin to value myself, respect myself, and even love myself. It's not an illusion. I know I have all the warts and weaknesses and all the things that need to be changed, but I also have those treasures that lie within. And in that experience of silence, connecting with my own original qualities, in that state of peace, I can also feel the love. But also, in that connection with the divine, the love that we're able to draw from God is love that's able to heal the soul. How many traumas does each one carry? Little things, big things. Maybe you've seen war in your life. Maybe your parents have been refugees of war. Mine were. My parents were refugees from the India partition. They were Hindus living in what today is Pakistan. So they saw war. And maybe you've heard the stories of that. I'm lucky I didn't, because my parents didn't think it was useful to tell me stories of tragedy and trauma. They told me nice things. They told me of the times before the war, when Hindus and Sikhs and Muslims all lived in harmony and would come in and out of each other's homes. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes parents pass on their burdens to their children and they share with them stories of great trauma, which is understandable also. So whether it's my trauma, whether it's the trauma that I've heard about, whether it's just seeing the trauma on television every night, so much suffering everywhere. Maybe it's what I see on my travels. But we carry a lot of things. And maybe stories of things that I've been deceived, I've been damaged, can be many things. How do I deal with all of this and come back to that state of not just love for one or two, but love that is inclusive, love for my human family? The power of love that comes from the divine is a healing power. It's able to heal the soul. And it's able to allow the human heart to become open and wide and be generous. And in that generosity of spirit, not only is my hurt healed, but also my heart is able to be open so that I can forgive. Whilst I can't forgive, then it's not just a little bit of poison against one individual, but it's poison, it's full stop. Very interesting, in a conversation with Daddy, you're seeing Daddy at a time when she is over 100. I've known Daddy for 50-something years. No, longer. 58 years, I can count it now. I've known Daddy for 58 years. And I've known her to be constantly wise and giving. And the gems of understanding she's shared with the world, I mean, we are lucky that a lot of that is recorded and is still available for all of us, whether in books or cassettes or YouTube or whatever. But one particular thing she shared at one point was that if I can't forgive this person, then yes, definitely I recognize that the pain, the sorrow, the bitterness is poison in my own heart. But it's not just against that one. It's actually impacting all my other relationships as well. Because it can't stay isolated and separated. But it's influencing my interaction with everybody else around me. And so, for my own well-being and health, but also for the safety and protection of all my other relationships, I have to wash it away. And most times it's difficult for the human soul to be able to do that for itself, just on your own. But in the connection with God, the love that comes is able to help me let go and wash away that bitterness and sorrow. And then, yes, I can forgive. Or even come to the point where I realize that it's not up to me to forgive. It's actually the jurisdiction of the one above. And so I took it on, but I didn't need to. It's between that individual and the one above. But what I have to do is to be able to have love for all and share that love with all. A lot of cleaning is needed. Sometimes we say here, but this is just the pumping machine. The memories, the feelings, the experiences are not here. This can be transplanted. You can pull it out and put another one in, and all sorts of bits of rubber, bits of plastic, all of that can go in. But we're actually talking about the soul and the experiences of the soul. As I take that love, on one side, yes, the cleansing happens automatically, but also it's a conscious decision that I want to let go. And so let go and let God. Would my world be a different place if I were able to have the power of love? But of course. And how great would be the impact if collectively, even this group here, were to carry with ourselves the power of love? The golden age would come very quickly, right? And we're not talking about physical, material things that create a golden age or an iron age. The resources of the world are available. with the love of the golden ages that we share them, and the harshness of the iron ages that we try to protect our resources and keep them to ourselves rather than understand it's one human family and that it's meant for sharing. And so really, peace is a great power. Love is an amazing great power. And maybe we spend the next few minutes experimenting with just filling ourselves with these powers. And then we take a break. Om Shanti. Turning inwards. Aware of myself. I, the soul, shine. I am a being of peace, in this awareness, in the presence of the Divine. From the ocean of peace, peace is able to reach me. Power of peace reaches out far and wide. And the power of peace touches the human family. Souls begin to be aware of the subtle power reaching them, and instead of thoughts of revenge or antagonism, souls become peaceful. And the power of peace spreads into the atmosphere. And touches all forms of life. The animal kingdom. Feel safe and cared for. And peace takes away the aggression. Humans and animals are able to live together in harmony, in peace. And the vibrations of peace reach out and touch all the elements. earth, air, water, even fire. All become peaceful and work in cooperation. Peace returns to our hearts and to this planet. Thank you.